We read the Mishnah yesterday, and in the Mishnah we discussed the issue of a Beit Habad. There was an olive press that sat beneath a gina, beneath someone who was planting or being zoreya, or a garden over there. So we said if the roof collapses in, right, what does he do? What does the person who is above do? He comes down and he plants in the area that was once the Beit Habad was with the olive press. So the question is, how much of the roof has to collapse in order for him to be entitled or to be completely inconvenienced? So we have a similar machlokas that we had before between Rav and Shmuel on the Mishnah of Abayit Valiyah about how much of the upper level, the floor of the upper level, has to collapse in order for this to be classified as the case of the Mishnah. So here the Gemara says on the top of Kuf Yud Chet Amud Aleph, Nifchata, if the roof has collapsed in, what does that mean? Rav Amar Beruba, in order to be classified as being the roof collapsed in, it has to be the rov of the roof has collapsed in. Ushmul Amar Ba'arba, over here it has to be four. So now it's interesting over here. Shmuel says arba, right, which would be arba amot, whereas by the roof, right before the ceiling or the floor, was arba'a, according to Shmuel, which would be in four tefachim. So here it's arba, which would be arba amot. All right. So now, Rav Amar Beruba, Rav says, why does he have to have the rove of the ceiling collapse in, or the floor on which he's planting? Why does it have to be the rove that collapses in? Because aval arba adam zorea chetzio lamata vechetzio lamala, a person would be willing to be inconvenienced. I mean, a person is willing to plant on different levels. So therefore, wherever it's, the roof is collapsed in, he's entitled to go downstairs, to go below into the olive press, and go ahead and plant down there. So a person would be willing to plant a part of it up above and a part of it below. Shmuel amar ba arba, that it's arba amot is the limit. A person doesn't plant, a person wants to plant on a plain where all of his growth or all of his vegetation are on one level. And therefore he's not willing to have half of it be above and half of it be below. Now, Vitzricha, the Gemara says Vitzricha because we have this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel here on the Mishnah, and we have the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel back on the Mishnah on Habayit Ve'Haliyah. Now, why do we need them to have their machlokas in both instances? The diashmuin and dira, if we have the case or the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel when it comes to abayit and aliyah, bahaka mar Shmuel, over there Shmuel says that's the case, mishum delavidi inche didari purtahacha purtahacha. People don't tend to live on multiple levels. They live on a single level. They don't have half here and half above. Aval inyan zriya, but when it comes to planting, avidi inche didari hacha purtahacha purtah, people tend to plant a little patch here, a little patch there. That isn't out of the ordinary. So Eimim Odele the Rav. So we say possibly he would agree to Rav in the case of our Mishnah here. So that's why we have the Machlokas here. The teacher Shmuel does not agree. V'yitmar b'hach, had we only had Rav and Shmuel's Machlokas on our Mishnah over here, b'hach k'amar Rav. Over here, Rav says that a person will plant some above and some below. Aval b'ha, in the case of Bayit V'aliyah, Bayit Dira, Eimim Odele the Shmuel, maybe he would agree to Shmuel that people tend to live on multiple levels. So Tzricha, therefore we need the Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel both by the case of Dira, the Bayit and the Aliyah, and the Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel here by the case of the Gina above the Beit Habad. Now, even though, as I pointed out, that there is some difference, meaning that, again, the Gemara's Lashon back in the first case was Shmuel Amar Ba'arba'a, which would be Arba'at Fachim, whereas over here the Lashon is Arba, according to him, which would be Arba'amot. So I don't know if there's a Girsa change somewhere that reconciles that says Shmuel says. Right. Oh, there is. Okay, there is a Girsa change to Arba'a. Question about what the difference is. So it makes sense that Shmuel has a consistent opinion. And based on the Rambam's Psak of Arba'at Fachim, then we would amend the Girsa here to read Arba'a instead of Arba'amot. We'd read it as Arba'a like it does on the first Mishnah, which would reference Tfachim. Right now, Gemara says that Noten lo zman. In the Mishnah, it says that we give him time to take down the tree or the bad wall. How much time is it? When we warn him, we tell him he's got to do it. How much time does he have? Bekama zman Beis Din. What does it mean, Beis Din gives him time? What's the standard limit to Beis Din's warnings or to anything that Beis Din does? I'm Rabbi Yochanan Shloshim Yom. 30 days is the standard. And now we have, as Tosfos says on the top here, Mikano lemeidim zman beidin lefrochovo. A person has to pay back his debts and other things that deal with process of Beis Din. The limit or the general span of time that we're dealing with is lamed yom, is 30 days. So this is the principle from here that 30 days is the basic standard of time or time frame in which Beis Din did it. Now, truthfully, there is less than that. Like for instance, in Nizikin. Right, then we don't give you 30 days to, for instance, if something breaks in Rashut HaRabim and you have to pick it up, we don't give you 30 days to pick it up because it's possible to pick it up quickly. I mean, that if it's spilled right now, and if that's the case, then we say, go ahead and we say pick it up right away because you have the capability to do that. But when they're asking you to take down a whole wall or they're asking you to take down a tree, that's more involved. And so there they give you a span of time. They give you 30 days in order to complete that process. All right, now, the Gemara continues. Misha yakot lo. So a person who has a wall that falls into his neighbor's yard. Right. So now the Gemara says that the Mishnah says, Hamakdani Seifa, Helech Yitziotecha, right? So he says, take the payment, right? We had two stages in the Mishnah. The first stage is that his wall collapses into his friend's garden. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to clear it out. You keep the stones. Over there, the person who owns the garden can refuse and say, no, you clean them up. I don't want the stones. That's number one. Then the second case is when he says to him, listen, you keep the stones. And the neighbor says, you know what? I'm going to keep the stones. I want to keep the stones. Then he's not able to reverse it. Meaning that the owner of the wall can't come over and say, here's your money for clearing out the stones, right? Here, go ahead, I want my stones back. So that he can't do. So Gemara says, Hamikdani Seifa, since the second half of that case says, Helech Hitziotecha, take your outlays, Michlau. So we can infer this, Defaninu Askino. It's a case where he already removed the bricks or the rocks. He's already cleared it out. Taimo Defaninu. That the reason that he's able to object or refuse to give him the objects back or the stones back is because he's already cleared it up. I mean, that he's basically had some form of kinyan, he's done something in action to show that he's actually taking possession of the item. Halopaninhu, if he was not to clear out the stones, then lo, it wouldn't have worked. Amai, why not? Once this wall falls into the neighbor's property and he says to the neighbor, listen, keep the stones, why doesn't he automatically kone the stones there in his property? Why? Because we have a tiknele sadeu. We have a chotzer shel adam kone bishvilo, right? That a chatzer, a person's courtyard, a person's per property is able to acquire on his behalf. Damar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, chatzer shel adam kone lo shelo midato. That a chatzer of an individual can take possession of it even when he's not aware. I mean, if it's to his benefit, then his chatzer can act as his agent or as his yad. And depending, we've seen that machlokas before. But it functions on his behalf, and if it's functioning on his behalf, then he can acquire on his behalf. Gemara says, wait, that's hani milehe chedeka mikavin lak nuyele. That's only in an instance where the individual is intending to give it to him, to be maknad, the object to him. Over here, he's trying to just be slippery and slide out and try to get out of having to do something. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that, first of all, the owner of the wall offers it to the individual whose gina it falls into. The person in the gina has the right to refuse and say, I don't want the bricks. And then the owner of the wall will have to come and clear them out. And if he doesn't clear them out, then Beis Din will penalize him, or you clear him out and then you will charge him for it. Now, if he says, you know what, the bala gina, the garden says, you know what, I'll keep the stones. No problem. I'm going to keep the stones. Then, if he's paninu, if he's already removed the stones and he's picked them up and he's made a full-fledged kinyan on them, then they can't be reversed. On the other hand, if he does not make a full-fledged kinyan on them and the owner of the wall wants to back out and wants to say, you know what, I really didn't mean this, I really wanted to keep the bricks, then we say to him, you know what, you're right, he can go back on his word and he's allowed to go keep his bricks or his stones. Why is that? So the Gemara challenges and says, wait, a chatzer should act just like the individual, when he removes them and makes a kinyan on it, why can't his chatzer do it on his behalf? It says, well, it has to do with the owner of the wall. Is the owner of the wall really intending to give the stones or the bricks over here? So the answer is, when he comes and he reverses his position where he says, I really didn't want to give them to you, so then why did he say up front, why don't you take the stones? The answer is, ishtimute kamishtamitle. He's basically trying to buy time before he has to clear it out. So if he says to buy time before he clears it out, he says, you know what, you keep the stones. Not that he really is intending or really believes or he wants him to take the stones, but he does it because He wants to buy himself some more time. So therefore, if the other individual comes and makes a full-fledged kinyan on it, then he can't back out anymore because he said it and he made a kinyan. But when it's his chatzer, the chatzer is not going to act here on behalf of the on the individual in a case where the person who's giving it does not intend to give a full-fledged kinyan or give over a kinyan in this instance. All right. Asucher lasotimo b'tevin. Someone who hires an individual to work with him with the straw. So Gemara says, why do I need the two cases? In the Mishnah, I gave the same case by the case of the wall falling into the garden, and then a case by the poel, the worker who's hired to do the work with the tevin. So why do I need two cases which teach me the same thing? One is that the Baal HaBayit can't force right, the other individual to accept his terms. And the second part of the case is that if once they've accepted the Baal HaBayit's terms, he can't walk away. So why do I need two cases to teach me that? So it says, v'tzricha, we need both. Because had you only taught me the first case by the case of Gina and the Kotel, when he says, listen, you keep the bricks, ain't shomimlo, we don't listen to him. Mishum deletli agra gabe. Because he has no obligation, meaning that the owner of the field here, or the owner of the gina, has no relationship with this individual on a monetary basis. They have no relationship. In our case, by the worker and the owner, or the worker and the employer, right? The itle agregabe, he owes money to the poel. The poel is now a claimant against the employer. Ema shomimlo. In that case, we say maybe we should listen to him and let him say, take the tevin. Take whatever you can get your hands on. Why? Damre inche. Right? This is a common saying. Mimari shuatech pare efra. Right? So when it comes to someone who owes you money, when it comes to a debtor, you should take whatever he gives you. Even if he gives you subim, whatever he hands to you, you take it because at least then you know you're getting paid back. It's never worth the risk to say no and then find out he can't pay you back later. So you take whatever you can get. So maybe over here we'd say the same thing. The poel, if the Baal HaBayit or the employer offers him payment, he should just take whatever he offers him. V'yish minyan hacha, if we had the second case only, the case of poel, hacha kibsh mekabalav ein shomim lo, right, when he already accepts to receive the tevin or kash as his salary, then we don't allow the Baal HaBayit to back out of it, mishum de'itle agra gabe, because of the same logic, meaning that since there is a monetary relationship between them, and he owes him money, and maybe we say that the acceptance of the payment in kind by the poel, that's what makes it that it's a finalized transaction, or that he can't reverse it, because that would be normal, or that would be considered to be a good thing for the poel to accept payment in such a manner. By the case of the wall and the stones, right? Maybe by the case where there is no monetary relationship between them, then we're going to say maybe we don't listen. When he keeps the bricks, say, give them back to the original owner. You have no right, or there's no reason for you to keep them over here. So that's why we need both cases in the Mishnah. Each case teaches us the tzad of the chiddush. The poel teaches us the tzad of the chiddush, that even though it's better to take something than nothing, nevertheless, the poel has the right to refuse to accept tevin of a cash, and he can say, I just want my cash. And the other way around, that we don't listen to the owner to back out of the offer that he made, right? Even by the case of Gina, even the case where the rocks fall into the other person's property, and really, there's no reason that he really should get these bricks. Nevertheless, if he offered to him and he took them, then we say you cannot reverse it. So tzricha, that's why we need both of them. All right, now Gemara says, ain't shomimlo. We don't listen. When he comes to reverse his position, when he offered him to, like, give him the stones or the bricks, or he offered to pay him in cash and tevin, they accepted, he can't back out. We don't listen to him. Vatanya shomimlo. Don't we have a case where we do say shomimlo? We do listen to him. So why in one instance is he allowed to back out, and in the other instance he's not allowed to back out? Right? What is the determination, right, of shomimlo or ain't shomimlo over here? Summer of Nachman Lokasha, Kan Bishalo, Kan Bishal Chaveiro. Right, it has to do with what the circumstances are. In the case where the individual is working for himself, the Poel is working for the Baal HaBayit, right, then that's one instance. And Kan Bishal Chaveiro is a case where the Poel is working for his friend, meaning he hired the Poel to work not on his property, but to work on his friend's property. So when it comes to the case of b'shel chaveiro, right? In that case, we say shomim lo. We let him pay him in kind. We let him pay him in tevin and cash. When it comes to shelo, his own stuff, we say you have to pay him out of cash and ain't shomim lo. So I said, amalei rovo the Rav Nachman. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, b'shelo my taima. Why, when it comes to his own stuff, his own payment, his own obligation to pay the wages, that we don't allow him to pay an other than cash? I mean, the poel can demand cash. Darmalei agralach, because we say that the obligation of the wages is on you, and you got to pay them. B'shel chavero nami. So why don't we say the same to b'shel chaveros? Charo alav, that you're compensating this worker for working in your friend's field. So you still are the one who's obligated to supply or pay the wages. If that's the case, then you should also, right, have to pay, meaning in cash. You shouldn't be able to give it in kind. D'tanya, because we have a brisa, so cheret ha-poel la-sot b'shelo, person who hires a worker supposedly to work in his own fields, meaning to work in the employer's fields, v'ra'o b'shel chavero, in the end he points him to another field to go work in that field, and that field's not his field, but his friend's field. Notein lo schar ma'o mishalom, we say he has to pay him in full. Right, now the employer over here can go back to his friend and say, listen, I benefited you, I upgraded your property, you have to pay me some money. May not have to pay him the full amount, but it's at least to pay him the amount of benefit or, you know, hana that he provided to him. So if that's the case, we see that when it comes to obligation of wages, you are just as obligated to pay your own worker as you are to pay a worker who you hire to work in someone else's field. There's still a restriction of Baal Talin. You still have to pay them, and therefore they both should be able to demand cash. I'm going to try again to differentiate. When do we listen to the Baal Bayit to pay in kind and not? Lokash kam b'shel lo kam b'shel hefker. Has to do with whether it's his, the employee is working in the employer's field with the employer's items, or did he hire him or employ him to work with Hefker, right? So that'll be the difference here in these two cases. Why? Because when he works in his field, when he works in his own stuff, he works on the tevin and cash of the employer, then the employer owes him money. He owes him cash. And he owes to pay him his wages, lo talin. Therefore, the worker can demand cash. On the other hand, when he asks him to go work in Hefker, right, then we say, as we've learned this before, Rav Nachman's of the position, a magbia mitzia lechavero, someone who picks up Hefker or picks up a mitzia for his friend, lo kana chavero, it does not work. You're not able to acquire it on behalf of your friend. So what we see here is that the work that he's doing when he's working with the Hefker remains Hefker. He has not acquired it on behalf of the Baal HaBayit. That means that the Poel is working with Hefker the whole time and not working with the Baal HaBayit's possessions. If he's not working with the Baal HaBayit's possessions, then the Baal HaBayit is not in violation of Lo Talin and he's not obligated to provide the wages. If that's the case, then he doesn't have to pay him in cash. He could say to him, listen, take from what you worked with. That's yours because I didn't acquire it yet. So, Eidve Rav the Rav Nachman. So, Rav again challenges this explanation according to Rav Nachman. Mitziat Poel Le'atzmo. That when a Poel finds a Mitziah, he gets to keep it. A worker is able to keep a Mitziah. Eimatai. When is this true? Bizman Shermelo Balabait Necheshimi Hayom. He asks him to do a specific Malacha. Come and hoe with me today or weed with me today. Right, adori mi ayom, meaning to come and weed or hoe with me today. So in that case, he hires him for a specific job. So anything outside that job does not belong to the Baal HaBayit or to the employer. So therefore, if the poel is weeding and hoeing, then he's doing it on behalf of the Baal HaBayit. But if he picks up a mitziah, then that's not on behalf of the Baal HaBayit, because that's not what he's hired for. On the other hand, if he hires him to say, in general, to work for him, right, Avali Marlo, I say me malacha hayom. He says, come, I'm hiring you to work with me all day today. Then Mitziato, the Baal HaBayit, when he picks up the item, it belongs to the Baal HaBayit because the Baal HaBayit basically says, I'm hiring you and anything that you do is for me today, no matter what it is. I'm not giving you a specific job. I'm just saying that you're working for me, period, today. So when he finds the Mitziah, he's also working for the Baal HaBayit. Tell Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman's going to give another solution. Lokasha kan b'hagba, kan b'chavata. It depends how he's working with the Hefker. If he's working with the Hefker by picking it up, literally hagbah, he lifts it up, then he is making a kinyan on the Hefker. And when he makes a kinyan on the Hefker, he's doing it on behalf of the Baal HaBayit, as we just saw. Since the Baal HaBayit here is hiring him to work with him that day, when he picks it up, he's picking it up on behalf of the Baal HaBayit. If he picks it up on behalf of the Baal HaBayit, because he's doing hagbah, there's a kinyan over here, then it becomes the tevin and kasher, becomes the produce of the Baal HaBayit. Once it becomes the produce of the Baal HaBayit, it's the equivalent of this poel working with the Balabayit's possessions. When he's working with the Balabayit's possessions, he has an obligation to pay him. There's an issur of lo talin, and he has to pay him in cash, wages. On the other hand, if he does it through chabata, if he works with the teven in cash, he's moving it, not by actually picking it up, but somehow rolling it or kicking it or pushing it aside, so therefore he never makes a formal kinyan on it, then the item remains hefker. If the item remains hefker when the poel is working with this item, then it's still hefker, and it's not the balabayit, it's not the employer's obligation to pay him, because he's not working for the balabayit. He's working on basically hefker, which will be his. Yeah. Yeah. Rashi does say that. Rashi says, which from the word be to habit, right, to look, which is gonli shmor, to watch, which is what you're quoting. But then he says, oh, lashlich malia la'aretz, or to throw it from a higher location to a lower location. So I don't know, I thought maybe over there that Rashi was interpreting it with a chet, like chavata, right, to kick it or to move it, but over there he's actually taking action with it. So that's why I explained it as chavata, or it could be habata with a hey, which would be lishmor, which Rashi brings down. So I thought that they had, Tzvi, thank you, but I thought they brought both. Rashi's explanation seemed to be both, one with a hey and one with a chet. All right. So now, Amar Rabbo, habata behefker tanahi. This idea that Rav Nachman puts forward, that if you do not are not magbia, you do not literally lift up the object, then you're not necessarily kone behefker, right? That idea, that habata, that simply being shomer, and we're going to see now this is a case of shomer like you were suggesting, where you are interacting with the hefker but never doing a physical picking up of the object, then that's a machlokas tanaim, whether you're kone or not. Why? It's not. We have a Mishnah in Shkalim and Menachot. This is deals with on Shvi'it. When it comes to the Kedushat Shvi'it, items that are during the Shvi'it, they still needed to first bring the Karban HaOmer or bring the Shtei HaLechem. So Hekdesh needed certain areas to be wheat or barley to be used for Hekdesh. So they used to hire people to do that. Shomrei Tzvichei Shvi'it. People who watch the Shvi'it, the growth of Shvi'it, in order to be used for Hekdesh. Notlim Scharam Mitzvah Talishka. They're entitled to get paid from the Trumat HaLishka. They're able to get paid from Hekdesh. Rabbi Yosef Omer, Arutzeh Mitnadevu. No, the person who wants to go and watch, he's a volunteer. V'shomer Chinam. And he does it for free. He doesn't get paid to watch it over here. Right? It's Amrlo, Ata Omer Kane. Right? If you do such a thing, Ein Bayim Mishol Tzibur, then it will end up that they're not coming from the Tzibur. So what does that mean? So let's explain this. My love, Bahaka Mifagate. This is the argument between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yosef here. The Tanakama sever Habata Behefker Koni. That Habata here as clearly has to be the explanation of Rashi, like you were saying before, to see or to guard. So in that case, Habata Behefker Koni. Here they hired an individual, or they're asking an individual to watch on behalf of Hekdesh. So now, Tanakama says that if you do watching, then you're Kone, the item. V'iyavile Agra in Ilolo. So if they pay him for it, that's fine. But if not, then it won't work. When it comes to watching or guarding by Hefker, you're not konet. When the Tzibur comes to bring it, then it's only at this point in time that they are zoche in this object. So that'll be a problem. So the Tanakhama says, listen, there is, when it comes to habata, when it comes to simply watching, then there is a kinyan right away. If there's a kinyan right away, then it's wonderful, because Hekdesh sent this individual to watch it. And since Hekdesh is the one sending this individual to watch it, because they're paying him to go do and watch it there, therefore Hekdesh takes possession of the item immediately. It's hefker. And then they send them to be shomer. When they send them to be shomer, that habata, that shmira, creates a kinyan on the hefker, and that kinyan on the hefker is on behalf of Hekdesh. So Hekdesh owns it from day one, me, the tzibur. The community owns it on day one. That's wonderful. But according to Rabbi Yossi says that habata, watching or being shomer, is not a form of kinyan when it comes to hefker. If that's the case, then what happens? This individual goes ahead and watches the item. If he's to watch the item, right, and then later on give it to Hekdesh, then what he's done basically is taken a right? Possession of the item. And if he's taking possession of the item, then when he passes along to Hefker, Hefker only takes possession afterwards, which means that you're going from a Yachid who owned it, a singular or an individual who owned the item until this point in time, and now, only now, is Hekdesh taking possession of the item. So therefore, we want, according to Rabbi Yossi, right, that the person who watches it should be a Shomer Chinam or a Mitna Dev, so that he actually doesn't take possession of the item. So now the Gemara says, okay, then what's the last line in the Mishnah that says, Amar lo atam mer kein, ein bayim mishel tzibur? If you say like you, Rabbi Yossi, then it will never come from the tzibur. Why is that? So how do we explain that? So the Gemara says, v'chiyaz l'tzibur mitash tohu dekozach, ma atam mer. So what does it mean, Matomer? What does that mean? Hachi Kamrile. They say, this is what the Chamim or the Tanakam is saying to Rabbi Yossi. Midvarecha lidvarenu. According to the way you're explaining it, in our words, Eino mer shtelechem by Mishel Tzibur, then they won't come from the Tzibur. So if they believed, like Rabbi Yossi, if you say midvarecha, that you are Shomer Chinam, according to a Dvarenu, where we say that Bata is Koneh, then we're going to run into a big problem. Because now, if he's being a Shomer Chinam and we're not paying him, and he's Koneh, he's not being Koneh on our behalf. He's Koneh on his own behalf. If he's Koneh on his own behalf, then, right, we don't, then it's going to come from the Yachid and not from the Tzibur. So basically, each one of them is according to the Shitatam. The Chachamim who say that Habata is a Kinyan must pay the Shomer in order that the Shomer is making the Kinyan on behalf of Hekdesh. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, who believes that Habata is not a Kinyan, therefore you don't have to pay him. He is a Shomer Chinam. If he goes and watches for free, we don't worry about it because there is no Kinyan here. There's no Kinyan until it comes into the possession of Hekdesh. Once it comes into possession of Hekdesh, then it's already part of the Tzibur. And the individual was never in between. So that would explain what we see from this, that the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi are arguing about whether Habata is sufficient to be a Kinyan on Hefker or not. And that's what Rav Nachman differentiated before between Shomimlo and in Shomimlo by the Breitot was the difference between Hagbah and Habata. And now Rabba comes and says, this idea of Habata is a Machlokes Tanaim. So now Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Lo. So Kulei Alma, the Machlokes here between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakam or the Chachamim, is not about Habata. It's Kuli Alma Habata Hebehefker Koni. Everybody believes that guarding is enough to have a connection to the Hefker to be formed as a Kinyan. Vahocha, our case of here is Chayshina and Sheme Lo Yimserem Yafeh Yafeh Kamiflagi. We worry that the individual won't hand them over to Hekdesh totally and completely. The Rabbanon Savri Yavinan Le Agro, the Rabbanon or the Tanakama say, right, we give him, we pay him. Ve'ilo, if we didn't pay him, Chayshina and Sheme Lo Yimserem Yafeh Yafeh, because we're worried if we don't pay him, then he won't really, with a full heart, give over the items to the Tzibor. If he doesn't give over with a full heart to the Tzibor, then it doesn't belong to the Tzibor. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Rabbi Yossi believes, Lo Chayshina and Sheme Lo Yimserem Yafeh Yafeh, we don't worry about that. The whole point that he's going down to watch there is on behalf of Hekdesh, so we don't worry that he's going to really take him for himself and not really want to give it over to Hekdesh. So how do you explain that last line in the Brisa? Hachikam Rile, Midvarecha, if we held like you that Shema lo yimser, that there's no problem of Shema lo yimserem yafeh, then Lidvarenu the Chashinan, right, according to us, who says, right, Chashinan Shema lo yimserem yafeh, Eino mer shtelechem by Mishel Tzibur. If we learn like you that he's a Shomer Chinam over here, and we hold like us that we worry about Shemel Yimserim Yafeh Yafeh, then we're going to have a problem. Meaning that Shomer Chinam will be a problem for us. And that's exactly, again, the same thing. They both agree, everybody agrees that Habata is a Kinyan over here. So there is a Kinyan. The only question is, when he hands it over to the Tzibur, does he hand it over with a full heart or not? Chamin believe that he doesn't hand it over with a full heart. Therefore, they must pay him in order to ensure that he gives over with a full heart. Because if we didn't pay him, that's the last line in the Braisa, then, and we held like you that he did it bechinam, we'd be worried. We would have a case where the Shtei Alechem, the Omer, don't come from the Tzibur, but rather from the Yachid, because we can't trust him to give it over properly. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi believes that we trust him to give it over properly and fully to the Tzibur, then we don't have to pay him. We can use him as a Shomer Chinam, no problem. Right now, the Gemara says Ikadam, right? There's another Emre here that Ravod Amar the Kuli Amma that everybody says Abat Befker Lo Kani. The first Lashon in Rava was that they are Koneh. The second Lashon in Rava is that Kuli Amma Abat Befker Lo Kani. When it comes to guarding of Hefker, right, then it is lo kani, that is no kinyan. So, ah, what's the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi now? We're worried about strong men coming in and grabbing away the produce that he's guarding. So what would be the difference? The Tanakama suffered Takinu Rabban and the Meitav Le'arba Azuze. The Chamim say that Rabban were metaking to pay the Shum'er of these areas for Hekdesh for Zuz. So that these strong-armed men will know about it. They'll hear that it's belonging to Hekdesh or it's being done on behalf of Hekdesh. And since it's being done on behalf of Hekdesh, they will stay away. So again, remember this, we've seen this many times. We saw it especially bolet in the Mishnayot, in the Darim. But this idea that even these people are balei zraot, who don't mind taking from other people without permission or bullying other people, if you say Hekdesh, they'll walk away. They won't touch it. So as soon as they pay this individual and they know it's Hekdesh, they'll walk away. Rabbi Yossi Savar, lo takinu. Rabbi Yossi says there was no such takana, right? They didn't have to make a takana. So now, umata umer, what do you do with that last piece in the braisa? What does minata umer? Hachikam rile. This is what they say to him. Midvarecha lidvarenu. If, according to your reasoning over here, that you say that it will be a shomer chinam, lidvarenu, according to our word over here, that we say that the Rabbanu were mitaking that he will get our bezuze, if he was to watch it for free, that means that what is he doing? Is basically forgiving Hekdesh from paying him his salary. He's basically saying, don't pay me the salary, I'm donating it back. What's the problem with that? Where does his salary come from? His salary comes from the Chumat Lishka, the same place they take out to pay for the Karbonot Tzibur. So usually it's because of the Tzibur, everybody together has a joint ownership of the Shumah Lishka, therefore the Karbonot come from everyone jointly. But if he forgives the wages that he's entitled to from Hekdesh, then what does Hekdesh do? Their Shumah Lishka now contains money that was donated by an individual. If it's donated by an individual, that means that we're going to have some Korban Sibur that has individual ownership, which is not allowed, or we can't have that. So therefore the Chamim say, we can't learn like you that he's a Shomer Chinam. Because if he's a Shomer Chinam and he waives his right to wages based on what we say that he's entitled to the wages, then we'll end up with private ownership of a Korban Tzibur. So also when Rabin came and said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that's the machlokas here between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakam or the Chachamim, is about whether we are choshesh for these strong men or strong arm people who strong arm and take away property, whether we want them to know or be clear that it's Hekdesh or not. That's machlokas between them. Okay, now, next Mishnah. All right. Amotzi zevel l'rishut harabim. Person who takes dung out into the rishut harabim. Amotzi motzi. Person who takes it out. Mezavel. The person who is accepting it or taking it off his hands to use as fertilizer has to take it out right away. Why? Because he doesn't have permission to put it out into the rishut harabim. So now he can transfer it through the rishut harabim, but he may not leave it in the rishut harabim. Therefore, he must ensure that if he's passing the dung to someone else, he puts it there, and the other individual comes and takes away right away. Ein shirim tit b'rishut harabim. You cannot place the or keep the tit, which is, sounds like the plaster, the cement, and have it soak in the Rishut Rabim. Vein lovnim levenim, and you can't cut bricks or form bricks with this tit in the Rishut Rabim. So what they used to do is they used to pour this tit into a big form, and then they used to slice or cut it like a cake in order to have the bricks come out or be formed in that placement on the ground. So you can't do this out in the Rishut Rabim. Aval, but we do have permission, govlim tit b'rishut rabim. You're allowed to mix, you know, the cement to be used for whatever construction you're doing immediately. You're allowed to do that right out inside in the rishut rabim. Avalo levenim, but you're not allowed to mix bricks, right, or to put together the bricks in the rishut rabim. So anything that's for immediate use or immediate construction, we allow you to stage out of the rishut rabim. On the other hand, anything that is over a time period or takes duration, then we say you can't use the rishut rabim for that purpose. Habonei b'rishut harabim, someone who builds, right, in the b'rishut harabim, and mevi avanim, mevi v'bonei boneh. Again, a person who's boneh is building and is using the b'rishut harabim as a staging area, then the person who's bringing the stones to him to use in the building, he brings the stones, and the builder or the contractor has to take them out right away. You can't leave them in the b'rishut harabim. V'emizik. And even though he's taken away immediately, if somehow, in the period of time that they were there, when one person deposited and the other one picked them up, someone got hurt, Mishalei Mashizik, he's responsible for any damage that happens. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af Mitakein Hu Et Melachto Lifnei Shloshim Yom. Shimon Gamliel says, no, you know what, the Rishut HaRabim, or the, I don't know if this is a social contract, or this is the, right, the assumption of the Reshut HaRabim is to be used in such a manner, which is that even for 30 days prior to any work you're doing, you can stage the work out of the Reshut HaRabim. So if you're going to do some sort of a building or some sort of changes to your house, you can stage that out of Reshut HaRabim for then the 30 days beforehand. So where it says, Lema masnis into lok Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? The Tanya, we have a brayser, Rabbi Yehuda omer b'shah hutzat zvalim, a time when people normally put their dung into the Reshut HaRabim. Adam motzi zvalo the Reshut HaRabim. Person can put his dung out into the Reshut HaRabim, v'tzovro ko shloshim yom, and it can repile it up every 30 days, k'day she'en yishof ragle adam ragle b'ema. So it'll get it stomped by people and animals in order to process. That was the way of processing the fertilizer to make it useful and better. Therefore, a person can put it out in the Reshut HaRabim in order to have it be trampled, and he can work it every 30 days. He can repile it up to get stomped down again. This is one of the conditions of which, or the social agreement between the people when Yeshua gave the land of Eretz Yisrael, he distributed, or they were helped them with the kibush and the chiluk of the Eretz. The agreement was that everybody would have the right to use the Reshut HaRabim to put their zevel out. Afilu tame Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, no, even our Mishnah could even be Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Mod Rabbi Yehuda shim hizik chayav l'shalem. Eino chanami, you have permission to do this, and you have the right to put it out there. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says, if it causes damage, you're still responsible for the damage. And therefore, in our Mishnah, it says that when you put it out, it has to be taken away immediately. Not that that's the ikur halacha. The halacha is that you could leave it there. You have permission to leave it there, but it's good advice. It's Eitzah Tovah. The Mishnah is telling you you should pick it up right away, because if you don't pick it up right away, you will be responsible for any nezek that takes place. It's v'hatznan, but don't we have a Mishnah that Moder Rabbi Yehuda b'ner Chanukah shu patur? Right, this is the case in the Mishnah in Baba Kama, that a person, a chenvani, who puts his ner Chanukah outside, and then a gamal loaded with pishtan walks by and it catches fire, then burns down the bira, burns down the building, right, that the person who put out the ner Chanukah is patur according to Rabbi Yehuda, mipnei shu aseh b'shut, because he's doing it with permission. My love, reshut the beitin. What does permission mean? What does it mean that he put his ner Chanukah out there with permission? So it means permission, what we say is the permission of Beit Din. So too over here, when he's putting out the dung, he's putting it out with the permission of Beit Din. If he's putting out the permission of Beit Din, he shouldn't be chayav for the nezek. So why by Ner Chanukah does Rabbi Yehuda say you're patur? And over here, in the case of the dung, he says you're chayav for the nezek. Where he says, no, it's not reshut Beit Din, but rather reshut the mitzvah. That when it comes to a mitzvah by Ner Chanukah, that's why you're patur. Over here, we're not talking about a case of a mitzvah. Putting dung out in the Reshut HaRabim is not a mitzvah. So now Gemara says, Atanyo, don't we have a braisa called Elu Shamru Mutarim Lekakel B'Reshut HaRabim? That all these items, the list of items where a person is permitted to use the Reshut HaRabim, Im Hizik Chayav L'Shalem. If it does damage, right, then you have to pay for it. Rabbi Yehuda Poter. Rabbi Yehuda says you are patur. See, even in a case, or especially in cases where you have permission, you are patur. So that would go against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah, again, is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have permission to put out the dung. If you have permission to put out the dung, not only do you have permission to put out the dung, but you're not chayav if it does nezek. If that's the case, it was against our Mishnah. Now you can't reread our Mishnah to fit into Rabbi Yehuda. We are rereading the Mishnah to say, okay, eino chanami, right, that mikar din, right, you do have permission to put it out there, and you could have put it out there. Just, if you do put it out, you're going to have nezek. So our Mishnah comes and gives an Eitzah Tovah to clear it out and say, don't clear it out right away so you won't be chayav. But our Mishnah clearly says you're chayav for the nezek. Over here we have Rabbi Yehuda explicitly saying that you are patur. Just like you have a right to put it out there, that right also entitles you to be patur from nezek. If that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda clearly cannot be the author of our Mishnah, which says chayav by nezek. It's pretty clear from this that Rabbi Yehuda cannot be the author of our Mishnah. So Amar Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, these three Tanaim, kulu svir lehu, they all hold, kol makom shnat nulo chamim reshut vezikol patur. Chamim give you permission to do something, and you end up, it causes damage in the end, you are patur. Rabbi Yehuda hadamran, Rabbi Yehuda is our case, right, we just mentioned over here, which is the case of where he's putting out zevel, he puts out, right, the dung, or any other maseh based on where you have permission to put it out there. If someone gets hurt, you are patur. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that's done. Rabbi Shimon Galil, what's the case that he says that? We have a Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Gomer, Af metakein hu et melachto lifnei shloshim yom. In our Mishnah, what does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel say? That a person is permitted to put out his materials or stage his materials for 30 days before he starts to work, and he can do that in Reshut HaRabim. And it's clear from based on what the Tanakhama says that if Im Hizik, you're Chayav, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is coming along to say that Im Hizik, Patur. Now, Rabbi Shimon, Ditnan, what's the case of Rabbi Shimon where we see this from? Ditnan, we have a Mishnah. Hayam Abido Ba'aliyah. Right, so if he, what, this is a mission of Baba Batra, again, a nice introduction of Baba Batra, that a person, if he wants to house an oven or a stove in his house, if he lives downstairs, he has to leave enough clearance above the stove so that it doesn't catch fire above. If he lives upstairs, he has to have a thick enough floor that it does not create a fire hazard by placing the oven or the stove upstairs. So that's exactly what the case is. So this Mishnah, the Hayam Amido Ba'aliyah, if he wants to put the stove or the oven upstairs, it has to have a floor with a thickness, right, that has a thickness of plaster on top of 3 tefachim. When it comes to a stove, then tefach. He only needs a tefach of guidance. Vehim hizik, if he does damage, meaning that if he puts it in there and he does what the chamim say, which is 3 tefachim for an oven or 1 tefach of thickness underneath for a stove, mishalei mash hizik. If the building catches fire from his stove, he's still responsible for any damage that's done. Shimon Omer, lo amru kol hashirim alalu, elo shem hizik, patur l'mishalei. The reason, the whole reason the Mishnah or the chamim laid out these measurements that tell you when you're permitted to put an oven or a stove in there is because they want to say, if you do it according to law, if you follow the law and you follow the, right, the demands of the city ordinances that you put out a thick enough floor, then if it does damage or it catches fire, you're going to be patur. That's the whole point of it. So they all three have that same opinion that you are patur when you have permission to do something. Tanu Rabbanan, Hachatzav. Hachatzav is the quarrier. Shemasar the satate that gives over. They're taking a stone to build into a wall or into a house now. So it starts out, they're going to start from the beginning of the process. Chatzav, the quarrier, who gives it to the satate. The satate is the individual who hews the stone, meaning he cuts it. He's the stone cutter that smooths out the stone. Satate chayav. If the stone gets damaged, or the stone does damage when it's in possession of the satate, of the one who's the stone cutter, he's chayav. In that case, he's chayav. A satate, shemasar the chamar, after he straightens out the rock, he smooths out and he cuts the sides, he gives over to chamar. Chamar is someone who takes items over longer distances. He's going to carry the stone to the building site. That's called the chamar. The chamar, who's the transport, basically the trucker who's going to take it over, then once he passes the chamar is chayav. Then the chamar becomes responsible for the stone if it breaks, or if it does damage. A chamar shemasar the katef, right, the let's say this is the 18-wheeler, gives it over to the local delivery guy. The katef is the one who carries it on his shoulder rather than the chamar. So he goes for shorter distances. He's delivering for shorter distances. Once he gives over to the katef, a katef chayav, he becomes responsible for the stone. A katef, now once the local delivery man gives it over, shemasar the benai, gives it over to one of the workers, the construction workers, then a benai chayav. Then the construction worker is chayav. Banai, shemasar the adrichel, the construction worker who gives it to the foreman. Right, here's the foreman on the job, and this foreman is the expert who makes sure that the stones are situated and placed properly. Then Adrichel Chayav, he becomes responsible for the stone. Again, if it breaks or does damage, he'll be responsible. V'imeniach Evan Aladimus, once he places the stone into its location in the building or on the wall, V'hezikan, later on it falls off, Kulan Chayavin, then they're all Chayav, L'shalem, Kulan Chayavin, everybody's responsible. V'hatanya, don't we have a Brais Acharon Chayav? Only the last one is Chayav, not everyone. V'kulan Puturin, the rest of the individuals are patur. It says lokasha kam schirut kam kablanut. Depends on how they're hired. If each individual worker is hired as a poel through schirut, through, you know, wages being paid to them, then each one acts independently. If each one acts independently, then it'll only be the last one's chayav. If he puts it into the wall and falls down, he's the one responsible. On the other hand, if they're hired as a kablanut, if they're hired as a contractor, I mean, they're hired, they're contracted, all these individuals together are contracted to ensure that the rock gets and they build the wall, then all of them are responsible for anything that happens. Now, once they place the rock onto the wall, it's no longer Adama Mazik if something happens because he's let go of it already. Once he's let go of it, comes the responsibility of all the parties to the contractor over here. All right. All right. Next Mishnah. Shteginot zu agav zu. You have two gardens, one above the other, meaning that they're not on the same plane. One is higher than the other. So there's basically a drop, some sort of incline or wall that sits between the two gardens. Vayerek bintayim. And there's along that wall or that incline, there's actually vegetation that's growing. It belongs to the upper level. Right? It belongs to the lower level. Why does it belong? Rabbi Meir says, why does it belong to the upper level garden? Because if the upper level garden was to dig out his afar and level it out with the other party, then there would be no wall to grow on. So it's clearly his dirt that is causing or giving the ability for the item to be grown over here. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Imirtzei Atachton, if the downstairs neighbor or the downstairs gina, I mean the lower level gina, wanted to come in and fill it, et ginato en kanyarek, then again you couldn't plant it because it's his airspace that is providing the opportunity to plant these vegetables over here. So basically the upstairs individual is providing the afar and the downstairs individual is providing the air. The airspace. So Amar Rabbi Meir, Machar Shneihem Yochlim Limchot Zel Zeh. Since both parties have a good claim over here, Ruin Mehechan Yerek Zeh Chai. We look from where this Yerek is drawing its sustenance. Right. So when we look at where it's drawing its sustenance, right, then that individual will get it. That individual will be entitled to it. Now, Amar Rabbi Shimon. Anything that the upper neighbor can reach from his garden and reach it, that belongs to him. That's his. V'hashar, and what remains is shel tachton. That belongs to the individual on the lower level. And that is because we don't expect, or the person will not be asked permission to go down and get his vegetables. That'll be a gnai for him to have to ask permission from the neighbor in order to go to his vegetables. So what we say is whatever he can reach, that is good. But if he can't reach it, then we don't say that he's going to go to the neighbor and ask him to get access. Since he won't do that, it'll belong to the lower level individual. I mean, from Rabbi Shimon, that Mi'ikar Adin, it really belongs to the upper level. It's just that he waives his right to take it when it comes to the parts that he can't actually reach. Right, now, Amar Rava, Bi'ikaro Kuli Alma Lo Plige De Elyon Havi. Everybody agrees that the stalk or the roots belong to the upper level because where are the roots found? They're found in the ground, and the dirt clearly belongs to the upper level. They argue about is the leaves that are up top, that which emerges from the ground, that which is above the ground. Rameir believes you get, take the leaves are basically mishubad or belong to the ikar. They grow out of the trunk or the roots, and therefore they're like the roots, just like the roots belong to the upstairs gina. So too does the main part. The leaves also belong to the upstairs neighbor. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, no. Lo amrina and shadei nofu batarikaro. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says, no, we don't throw the nof after the ikar, meaning that we don't throw the leaves after the core or the stem or the roots over here, and therefore the stem or the roots will belong to the upstairs, and that which emerges above the leaves and that which is up above will belong, above the ground will belong to the lower level, because that's been sustained, or that's in the avir, the airspace, which is really the possession of the, of the lower level. The Tanya, we have a braisa that shows this similar machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda that we see in our Mishnah. Just like Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah says it belongs to the upper level, and Rabbi Yehuda says it belongs to the lower level, we have a similar concept, right, that happens by, Tosus has a girsa here, that it's Tanya Nami Gabi Mecha Chumemka. We have a braisa that supports this by business or interactions, transactions, like this. What is that? Tanya, Ayotzeimen Ageza, if someone bought a tree and a piece of land, he doesn't buy the land is owned by one individual, and he purchases the tree on the land for its output. Now, a geza, something comes out, a new shoot, a new branch comes out. When it comes out, right, min a geza or min a shirashim, right, whether it comes out from the trunk or from the roots, harayelu shel bal hakarka, div Rabbi Meir, they belong to the person who owns the land. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, min a geza shel bal habayit, when it comes to the trunk, shel bel al ilan, it belongs to the person who owns the tree. Min hasharashim, when it comes to the roots, then it's shel bala karko. So we see a sim achlokas over here, right? That what do we look at? We look at the core versus the what grows out. What grows from the roots? The roots are in the ground. The roots are in the ground, that's karka. Karka belongs to whom? That belongs to the bala karka. So when it grows out of the roots, everybody agrees that it belongs to the bala karka. Now, when it grows out of the geza, when it goes out of the trunk, that's the machlokas, same machlokas. Rabbi Meir believes that shadar nofo batari karo, that we say whatever is, right, appended, whatever is growing out of this tree, we throw it after the roots, because the roots are what sustain it. Now, Rashi makes a point here that it has to be a case where it's below, within three tefachim of the ground. I mean, it's part of the part that is down low, low, low on the ground. That part belongs along with the shorashim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, They're two separate items. When it grows from the Sharashim, that belongs to the Balakarka. But when it grows from the Ilan, the tree itself, the tree belongs to the one who bought the tree. Therefore, the new branch will belong to the individual who owns the tree. Enochanan, if it goes out of the roots, I agree with you. Now, if it's non, Nami Gabi Orla. We have a similar concept to Machlokas Matina when it comes to Orla, Ki Hai Gavna. Ilana Yotze Mina Geza Umina Sharashim. Again, something that comes out of the trunk or the roots. Chayav ba'orla, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that in both those instances, you're a chayav in orla, right? Because we consider it to be a new growth. It's a totally new growth. If it's a totally new growth, it belongs to the Baal HaKarka. Because if it wasn't a new growth, then it would belong to the Baal HaIlan. The fact that it's classified as a new growth, that's not what he sold him. He sold him the tree. He didn't sell him any new trees. And these are classified as new trees. If they're new trees, then it's Orla. And also, that will not entitle the Baal HaIlan to anything here. Rabbi Yehuda on the other hand says, Mina Geze Patur. If it goes out of the trunk, you are Patur. Mina Sharashim Chayav. If it goes out of the roots, then you're chayav. If it goes out of the roots, it's clearly a new tree. If it's a new tree, then you're chayav in orla, and you have no claim on it. On the other hand, when it goes out of the giza, when it goes out of the trunk, then that's part of the ilan. If it's part of the ilan, it belongs to the bala ilan. If it belongs to the bala ilan, then it's a part of the ilan. It's an extension of the ilan. If the ilan already has passed orla, then so too this new growth that comes out will also be patur from orla. And again, when Rashi says this, if you look, Rashi says over here, Chayav Bo'orla, right? That Garcina the Rabbi Meir of Yilan Hula Atzmo, the Geza Samuch the Karka, but Tokshlo Shat Kekarkahu. Then anything that the trunk or the basis, which is down by the ground, is equivalent to Karka. That's why Rabbi Meir says it's as if it grows out of the Karka. It's as if it's growing out of the Shurashim or out of the Karka. Even though it's above the ground, it's still the equivalent or like it grew out of the Karka. But Tricha, we need both of these cases, the Mekach HaMemkar case, and we need the case of Orla. Diash Minan Kamaita, if you only told us the case of Mekach HaMemkar, but Hakam Rabbi the Mishum Dimimona, that it's a monetary issue of Agabi Orla di Isura, when you come into Isur, Ema Modele Rabbi Meir, maybe he would agree to Rabbi Meir to be Machmir over here and say it all belongs to the Balakarka, it's a new tree, and therefore you're Chayiv in Orla. V'itmar Baha. Had you only told me the case of Orla, Baha Kama Rabbi Meir. In this case is when Rabbi Meir says his position that everything belongs to the Balakarka, because there it's the Chumrah, that you have to take Orla. They'll all be classified as Orla of Avahai. By the case of Mekach HaMemkar, Ema Motile Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe agrees to Rabbi Yehuda, because there it's only a din in Momo, not a din in Visur. Tzriche. Therefore, we need both cases over here. Tosos points out as an aside that it's not a clear parallel. The cases aren't clearly parallel. Arlo and Mekach HaMemkar. Because the case of Mekach HaMemkar, you could reverse the positions of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and you could still explain our Mishnah, and you could still explain the case of Orla. So he says it's not Mukhrach. All he says is that we see the same concept in both cases, that Rabbi Meir favors the ownership of the Balakarka, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there's a split between the Balakarka and the Balahayilan. Okay, now the last part of the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Kosha Elyon Yochol Livshot, whatever the upper can reach to, that belongs to him. Amrei de Rabbi Nai, Uval Shelo Yanas. As long as he doesn't do any acrobatics to get it. I mean, he doesn't stretch himself beyond reason to reach it. It has to be something that he can reach in a comfortable way. Then it belongs to him. Bai Rava Anan, Vitema Rabbi Yirmiya, Magia Lenofo, Vein Magia Leikaro. If he's able to reach the growth, but not the core stem or the Shorashim or the roots, right? The whole reason we say that it belongs to the upper level is because it's growing out of the ground, and the ground belongs to the upper level. So here we can only reach the leaves, but he can't reach the actual roots or the stem. What's the din? Now, Argamar has the reverse question as well, although the Gra eliminates this Girsa, because it's clear here, Magili Karove, Magili Nofo, the answer should be clear here, that it does belong to Elyon, because he can reach the Ikar, and that's what really matters. Right? So what's the din over here? Teiku. The Gemara says, we don't have an answer. When he can only reach the Nof, and he can't reach the Ikar, right, then we don't know whether the Elyon really is entitled to keep it over there. Okay, Amar Ephraim, Safra. So Ephraim Safra, Talmido Shel Reish Lakish, the student of Reish Lakish, Mishum Reish Lakish, in the name of Reish Lakish, Halocha Ke Rabbi Shimon. The locha is like Rabbi Shimon. What does that mean that the locha is like Rabbi Shimon? The locha is like Rabbi Shimon, that whoever the upper level can reach, that belongs to him. Now, technically, even though the rest should belong to him as well, but since it's not, it's maguna to him to ask permission to get access to his own fruits and vegetables, he waives his right to them. When he waives his right to them, then it belongs to the lower level, the individual down below can take them. So that is the locha of Rabbi Shimon. Amrua kamei de Shavur Malka. They said this in front of Shavur Malka. Rashi says Shavur Malka was a king of Paras, a king of Persia, who used to be a baki. He was a baki in civil law. And so therefore he learned the Mishnayot when he heard things in civil law and he heard something that Rabbi Shimon said, he was excited because he thought it was the right din. So that's what it says. Amarlo, apiryon, namtiyeh the Rabbi Shimon. We should give an ashkoyach. We should give a chen shalana. We should say thanks to Rabbi Shimon because the din or the psak halacha should be like Rabbi Shimon. What Rabbi Shimon says makes sense. Rashi does bring an alternative shot here that Shavu Malka is Shmuel, but he rejects it because he says it doesn't make sense here that that they should have gotten excited that Shmuel would all of a sudden get excited that he heard from Reish Lakish that the din is like Rabbi Shimon. Shmuel should have been able to come to that conclusion on his own. He doesn't need Reish Lakish to tell him that. So Rashi says the Shavu Malka here is clearly king of Paras, and he got excited by the fact that the Loch is like Rabbi Shimon. All right, we'll stop over here. All right, Shkoyach.